This is episode 491 of the Locked On Texas Rangers podcast. I am your host, Bryce Patrick, here today with a very special guest, old friend Taylor Blake Ward, who has written a book, In Search of Millionaires, in parentheses, The Life of Baseball Gypsy. He is not a baseball gypsy, a baseball homebody, which is something that I wish I came up with at the moment, but didn't come up with until 5 seconds after I finished recording with him. But it's fine. I still get credit for it here. It's in the intro. Therefore, you think that I'm witty beforehand, even though I've just spoiled my own surprise. But we talk a lot about that, about the Angels, a team that he covers, about a fun story about a former president / Rangers owner, and all kinds of fun stuff in his book. Also, Rangers prospects. He is an expert on prospect and expert on the MLB draft. So we talk Jack Leiter, of course, and offseason predictions, all kinds of fun stuff like that coming up on this episode of Locked On Rangers. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Rangers, your daily Texas Rangers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And you are locked on to the Texas Rangers podcast. I'm here joined today by a special guest, a dear, dear friend, an old friend of the pod, Taylor Blake Ward, formerly of Locked On Angels, now covers the Angels for homeplateview.com, former High Desert Mavericks director of broadcasting and PR, and the author of a book that is coming out that is called In Search of Millionaires, in parentheses, The Life of a Baseball Gypsy. How you doing, Taylor?
I'm good, man. How are you doing? I was going to give, I know that we're on YouTube now, so I was going to give peace signs and rocking signs, but I no gang signs, you know, West Side, what's up?
Yeah, this is a gang sign free podcast. Yeah. If you want to do like the Rec'em Tech, that those are the only hand signs.
The go horns or whatever.
We do horns down. Texas actually lost to Kansas in football this last week. Okay. People forget that. But I don't forget, and I will never stop laughing because it was a beautiful moment. My one Kansas friend was very, very happy, and she was like,
yeah, I'm sure your Arlington listeners are very happy to hear the Longhorns are not your favorite team while you wear that Cowboys hat.
Well, they already know. They already know me and who I am. You know, I'm doing great. It's a good week, and I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Rangers your first listen of the day. It can actually be your first listen of the day as opposed to yesterday, which I was recording later in the afternoon. But if you haven't checked out my show with the man behind the Texas Rangers UK fans account, very good show, very interesting show, a lot of fun there talking with that wonderful man. But I'm here talking with a different wonderful man who wrote a baseball book, and it's a really interesting book and a great title. As someone who has to come up with titles for a lot of headlines, I am very envious of how great the title is of that book. But tell me a little bit about your book. I know it's about baseball and gypsies and millionaires, something like that?
Something like that. Bobby Fontaine, longtime baseball scout, scouting director for the Angels, the Padres, the Expos, the White Sox, the Mariners, almost 50 years in the game. And it's his story. It's his biography, a documentation of his life. He signed players like Ozzie Smith, Randy Johnson, Tony Gwynn, heck of a lot of all-stars, basically built that entire O2 team as a scouting director. It's just his life story. It's a really interesting book. I love the project. The title, All His Work, he had that from the get-go, In Search of Millionaires, Life of a Baseball Gypsy. First chapter is a baseball gypsy, and just a really interesting project to work on and get to know Bobby during this process. Just a really incredible guy in the first place. That's what really matters, is just he's such a great guy. But, you know, second to that is his baseball career as a scout is near unmatched. And it's really incredible to be able to document his life.
Yeah, I mean, baseball scouts are always some of the most interesting people. And, like, they literally are baseball gypsies going to all kinds of different places. And, man, 50 years in the game. Like, that is a guy who has got a lot of stories to tell. And, you know, he picked a great guy to be the one to tell those stories, I think.
Well, you know, it really was interesting. Tim Mead, who was the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame just last year, and he was with the Angels for 30 some years prior to that, you know, he sent me a text and said, I got this guy that's got a project in mind, and that's all I knew going into it. And we met at a coffee shop in my hometown, and Bobby told me all these stories, and You know, he's telling me stories about that baseball team. We're talking about people that we knew from the past. We're talking High Desert Mavericks, things like this, and you know, talking about the Dominican and places that are just really unique. And immediately I said, you know, Bobby, if you trust me, man, I'm all for it. This is great. And he did. And we're just really happy to have it out. It was a long project for him. It was about a decade long project for him, about a 2-year project for me. And just to have it out is incredible. It's incredible to sit there and have a hard copy book sitting in front of me saying, let's go. This is great. We have a book.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, a 2-year project. I mean, I feel very accomplished when I have, you know, a podcast like I knew about and planned like a week in advance. Like, oh yeah, I got a guest book for a whole week in advance. Or, oh my gosh, I have like a whole, if I have a whole week shows like planned out the week before, I'm like, wow, look at me. I did such an amazing thing with so much, you know, planning and all this. But writing a freaking book, man, that is an incredible tale. And we talked a little bit about this book, actually a lot bit about this book before the show. And one of the things you brought up in the Rangers ties to it is tied to a certain former president who used to be a little bit involved with the Texas Rangers. Can you tell me a little bit about that anecdote that we were chatting about beforehand?
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone asks about my favorite part of the book, and it always is the same response for me is when the USSR fell and became Russia, Bobby went to Russia. Bill Bavasi was with the Angels. He was general manager, and him and Bobby had this plan to go take the athletes from Russia and turn them into baseball players. You know, let's see these guys that are javelin throwers, see if they can throw a baseball, and see these guys that are rowers and see if they can swing a baseball bat. And they were trying to build this process right at the fall of the USSR. I mean, I'm talking, it's 3-4 months after the USSR fell. Soviet Union completely evaporated. And it's those stories. But when Bobby returned from Russia after a little bit of time there, he called up George Bush, who was president. I believe he was president of the Texas Rangers at that time. This would have been 92, 93, roughly. And he called George and said, hey, you know, do you think you could get a hold of your dad, who had just come out of his presidency, and said, you know, do you think you could get a hold of your dad and maybe we can talk to some of the Russian officials and try and build an academy in Russia? And George H.W. Bush sent a letter back. It's in the book. We have a picture of it. I have a full copy of it. It's sitting in my documents right now, a letter from George H.W. Bush right after the end of his presidency. And it's that... ignoring everything about any political opinions that anyone has, the fact that you have a letter from the president is, you gotta be kidding me, right? So really cool to have the Bush family involved with this process.
Yeah, they were definitely very involved. George Bush with Eddie Childs. I'm on his Wikipedia page. I'm trying to look up, I'm like, because I wasn't really alive back then. They bought the team in April of 1989. He owned equity in the team, wasn't like the main guy who was owning it. And then, let's see, left his position with Rangers to be the governor of Texas in 1994. So about a 5-year period when he was in charge of the Texas Rangers. So, yeah, it's kind of wild. He still goes to a whole bunch of games and always sits right behind the dugout. But, man, that is such an insane program to like go and like, all right, we're gonna go steal these guys from Russia, like we won the Cold War, now we're gonna take their athletes and make them baseball players.
Well, like, you think of just the whole point of it is you think of Russian athletes, they were superior to everyone. Hockey, basketball, they were the best of the best. And the Cubans and the Japanese were assisting the Russians in the baseball programs in the late 1980s, early 1990s, and they were trying to build a program. It wasn't necessarily successful and still isn't today. We don't have a Russian professional baseball player by any means, but the fact that, you know, these are still athletes, and a lot of baseball is athleticism. So the Angels Bobby was with the Angels at the time, and they were able to take 3 kids back stateside who had very short professional careers, but the fact that they were able to take 3 guys who were parts of you know, championship teams even at the rookie ball level in assisting, and even talking to Joe Madden over the year, talking about, you know, this, he's talking about this one guy and he says, yeah, I remember him. He came in and closed out our game for the championship, and he had Cuban cigars after the game. And, you know, he was a paratrooper, so you think he's jumping out of a plane somewhere in Siberia, he'd be perfectly fine with throwing the ninth inning, I'd assume.
Yeah, a guy who definitely is used to pressure. Man, that's absolutely insane. That's a huge middle finger of pressure. Like, hey, you lost the Cold War. Now you guys are going to come play baseball. Like, that's the ultimate, like, America, like, planting the flag and, like, flipping the double bird as they're doing their victory lap on the Cold War. Absolutely. We're taking a quick break. When we come back, we talk a little bit more about this book and about, I don't know, who knows where we'll go. Coming up right after this word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by betonline.ag. We're back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of basketball season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website, sign up today, receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. Basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. And now back to my talk with Taylor Blake Ward, author of the soon-to-be hit book, In Search of Millionaires, The Life of a Baseball Gypsy. And we are back with the great Taylor Blake Ward, the author, the baseball appreciator, the sweatshirt wearer, talking all things about. I've gotten really good at my epithet game, one of those two.
Well, see, that's the funny part is because how many times did I take this sweater off and put it back on before we started recording? It's like in the mid-40s right now, and I took it off, and I'm like, man, I'm wearing like the tightest shirt I own. And it's cold, and it's like, I got to put this sweatshirt back on. Then I started singing about San Francisco, and yeah, well.
Yeah, you'll miss the good part.
Great segue.
Yeah, I mean, right here, it was 80 degrees in Dallas today. So very, very different weather. Of course, I didn't go outside. Ugh, why would I go outside? Yeah, that's definitely a red flag about me and the kind of day I'm having. But it's fine. I'm here talking baseball, and, you know, what could be wrong when you're talking baseball with Taylor Blake Ward, the author, the writer, the baseball gypsy himself, maybe?
No. We're going to leave that to the scouting world, the scouts of the game.
I don't know. Baseball, I don't know what a word that's like almost like gypsy, like the opposite of gypsy. I don't know. Anti-gypsy? The stationary baseball person?
Sure. Yeah. I'll be sure.
The entrenched person who covers a lot of baseball and, you know, watched a very fun team with Shohei Ohtani. And I know we talked a lot about Ohtani, and I think, it's not tonight. They announced the Rookie of the Year awards, the fraudulent Rookie of the Year award in the American League, where they completely disrespected the greatest rookie this year, Nicolas Garcia, which is just really hurtful. But it's okay. Sporting News is the real American League Rookie of the Year deciders. They gave him the award, and we're fine. We have moved past it. Congrats to Randy Rosarena on your sham trophy. You did have a great season, though. But I don't even know where I was going with that. But I figured I had to touch on it at least a little bit since it is Tuesday's episode and it happened last night. But anyway, I think MVP is where I was going with that, and they haven't announced that just yet, unless I missed it, which is entirely possible. But I think that's like either tomorrow or Tuesday. They have like this whole week
Thursday
where they're announcing awards because that's what baseball does, because nothing's happening in November. And so they're just like, I don't know, here awards. Have we voted on these like 2 months ago? Sure. Does it matter? No. But I'm pretty sure Shohei Ohtani is going to win the MVP award this year. And now that I think the last time we recorded, it was like still during the season, maybe like the very end.
Yeah, close to.
Now that it's like a month and a half since the Angel season has been done, do you have any new like gained reverence and in perspective on the great season of Shohei Ohtani?
Not necessarily. I think when we get looking through history, I think that's what it's going to be. I mean, I think during the course of the season, every night it was something new that you'd never seen. And I think you know, putting the excitement away, I think with the MVP award, it's whether or not this is going to be unanimous. I'd put serious top dollar on Shohei Ohtani winning this award. You know, I really don't think there's a chance at all that he's not going to be the most valuable player in the American League. But you know, you look at the season, and I feel like, I think for me personally, and this is going to sound really stupid, is I had so much, so many stats lined up ready to produce these articles, and he didn't hit the 50 home run mark, or he didn't hit this mark. And I'm like, oh man, that's disappointing. And it's like, what, are you stupid? Like, what do you mean disappointing? I'm like, man, calling myself an idiot completely, because it's like, this dude is one of the greatest seasons of baseball history. You know, argue it however you want to argue it, but argue, you know, this is one of the greatest seasons ever. And, he's an interesting guy. I mean, you know, he just talked to the Japanese media yesterday or Sunday it would have been, and had a lot to say about what was going on during that process about the Angels and trying to figure out, you know, he wants to win. It's as simple as that. And the Angels have a lot to do this winter to get them to a winning ball club. I think it's going to be tough. And something that, you know, I this is the first time I'm kind of sharing it with you, is I had a conversation with an agent, and he says, I don't know why any player would sign in California right now because of the taxes. And Shohei Ohtani even mentioned the taxes to the Japanese media. He says, I pay a lot of taxes. And I was thinking about that. I said, you know, heck, why would Carlos Correa, and I'm just using him as an outlier, but why would Carlos Correa come to the Angels or the Dodgers or the Padres or the Giants or whatever when he can sign in Houston or Texas in Arlington there and pay half the taxes? You know, why wouldn't a free agent go sign at a place like Texas? And so it's interesting. The Angels are going to have a very tough winter trying to make a competitive team. And the Rangers, you know, depending on the reports have been very interesting. The Rangers may have a really interesting winter that kind of accelerates their potential winning format coming up here soon.
So you're saying, you know, potential free agents from somewhere like California, somewhere near, you know, Anaheim, I don't know, say like some random team, like, I don't know, like the Los Angeles Dodgers. Let's say someone random who happens to be a free agent. I don't know, like Clayton Kershaw or like Corey Seager.
Not anybody. Clayton Kershaw is not the most random when we're talking Texas and California here.
Literally, but has spent like the entire last 2 weeks just, you know, pontificating and praying and lighting summoning circles to try and bring no longer young Clayton Kershaw, but old wise wizened. Is it wizened, not wizened?
sure.
Old wise Clayton Kershaw here to reprise the role of Nolan Ryan, except maybe do it on a winning team. But that would definitely, that makes me very happy. And so you're also saying that Shohei Ohtani regrets not signing with the Rangers all those years ago.
That's you what and I'm I hearing
direct
this,
words out of your mouth.
You and I have had this conversation, I believe, when Shohei Ohtani was coming over. And mm-hmm. I'm going to say, because so he signed in December. I'm going to say in November, I was 95% certain he was going to the Texas Rangers.
Gosh.
I was 95% certain. And I think you and I have had this conversation. I was told every little bit. I was on that Shohei front heavily, and I was certain he was going to Texas.
Dang it. Oh, my gosh. You know how happy that would have made me if, like, I know by then Yu Darvish was gone. But can you imagine a Yu Darvish, Shohei Ohtani top two in a Rangers rotate? Like, but part of me is like, you know what, the Rangers fans didn't really appreciate Yu Darvish the way that he deserved, and so like, maybe, I mean, it'd be impossible not to appreciate Shohei after what he's done this year. Like, there's no sports fan base that is so terrible that they wouldn't appreciate the absolute majesty and greatness of what Shohei Ohtani did this year. But maybe they wouldn't appreciate as much like until this year. Like, he's had some pretty good seasons.
I think that this year was just so different from all the other years. I think there was an appreciation prior to this. I think mm-hmm. everyone understood this is the most exciting guy in baseball. But now that he's doing both and doing both in the same games, you know, everything like this, it's a totally different standard. Mentioning Yu Darvish, just to kind of go back to the book a little bit, is, mm-hmm. you know, Bobby was in Japan seeing Yu Darvish in high school. So there's a scouting report on Yu Darvish when he was in high school prior to his time with the Rangers. And I was talking to Javier Reyes of Locked On Padres about this. It's just really interesting to get those kind of reports because, you know, we all knew who Yu Darvish was prior to his time with the Rangers when he was coming over. But to actually have a scout give a firsthand report on him from when he was 18 years old, 17 years old, really interesting. So, you know, between – I think it's more of – I'm going back to the book to talk about Yu Darvish, but I'm also trying to not make you upset about the Shohei Ohtani thing too.
That's fair. I do appreciate it. I don't think we've had that exact conversation because that nail hit like real close to the chest because I wanted him so badly. But we're taking a quick break. When we come back and talk a little bit more about Yu Darvish, about some Rangers prospects, and about this wonderful book written by my good friend Taylor Blake Ward. Coming up right after this. And we are back with the one, the only, the extraordinary, the that's it.
Keep it going. My head just gets big. Here we go. My head just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
The large headed, the cap wearing, hoodie down. Where I don't know.
you're on one, man. You're on one.
It's 1:27 a.m. and my epitaphs and epithets and my thetaphs have all run out for the night. But it's all right. We don't have any more ad breaks, so they ran dry at a nice place. But I'm curious about what that scouting report said. Did you just say this guy is stupid good? What the heck? How does he have 87 pitches? That seems legally like gray area.
Yeah, I'm actually gonna pull it up because I can't remember it off the top of my head. I've got the manuscript right here, but you know, we talk about Darvish right away, just special arm. You talk about all the hotels reading it here, all the pitches, you know, just incredible. We talk about just the practice of it, how he practiced, how those teams went about things. Fluid delivery, throw strikes, throws from different angles, a quick free arm. That arm angle, just the arm action, the arm angle made it look like he has 15 different pitches. And he may for all we know, he could have 15 different pitches. So, yeah, you get a brief scouting report. It's about, you know, 2-3 paragraphs long, but it really does touch on just how talented he was and is.
Yeah, I was curious if he had started, I guess, if you saw him in high school. How old was he when he came? He was about 25, I think, right?
So roughly.
It wouldn't have been until later, because I remember either the last year or maybe the last couple of years leading up to when he knew he was coming over. He started throwing, I think, bullpen sessions with like Major League Baseball regulation size ball, because they're a little different, a little bit bigger than the Japanese balls that he was used to, just so he could like get his arm kind of used to that. And it's just like that level of like detail orientation and like obsession about the meticulous things. Like, I think that makes him just so stupendous.
You talk about a guy that healthy Yu Darvish is just untouchable, an insane talent. And to be able to have a feel, we always talk about feel and, you know, we talk about prospects and it's like, you know, these guys have to develop their changeup. It takes this long. You have to have a feel for your changeup. For him to have a feel for, he's got 8-9 pitches. I mean, realistically, he's got 8 or 9 pitches. And to be able to throw him for strikes, know exactly what he's doing, he is such a rare talent. And I don't think we appreciate – maybe the statistics and things like this haven't allowed us to appreciate him the way that we should, but he is so special.
Yeah, literally the most electric stuff I've ever seen. And the most brutal, just like – cruel thing I've ever seen is a Yu Darvish rehab start lasted 2 innings against double-A hitters. I had the absolute joy to sit in like the scouts row seats and see him go from 98, like he went to this one guy, 98, like high outside, painted on the black, 98, like I think it was actually 99, the second pitch was like low and outside to this right-handed hitter, called strike on the black. Then drops in his Ephus pitch, like just right there, just called strike, and the guy just looked at it and like just, I swear to God, he almost like I thought he was gonna fall over and just
40 mile per hour difference out of nowhere, just like, sitting.
I was like, someone called the cops because this man just like stole his livelihood, took him to church, like pulled his pants down and kicked him over right in front of the entire family. Like it was like that level of embarrassment, like
man.
I'm like, this is, I think he's good. I think he's good with rehabbing. Like I just bring him up tomorrow. Good Lord. It was absolutely a thing of beauty. But speaking of guys who, I guess he's not in Frisco yet. That would have been a nice segue if he had actually pitched this year, but he did pitch a little bit in college, you know, a couple hundred I'm not a couple hundred, just 120 innings, whatever. I'm trying to transition to talk about Mr. Jack Leiter. And I know he's not in California, so you haven't seen him in person, but you do a lot of draft coverage. And so I know you know a little bit about this guy, Jack Leiter, who seems like he might be a pretty decent baseball player. Do you think he might be good?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm being real honest, outside of in-person looks, I watched Jack Leiter more than I watched any amateur player this year. I saw him on TV almost every start, or close to, you know, within reason. And yeah, this guy is really going to be a special pitcher, potential frontline arm. Very good reason he went number two in the draft. You know, there was some questions there about Boston trying to manipulate the draft a little bit, get him down to four, and didn't work for him. And Texas just walks away with a gem. I mean, this guy. You're going to hear a lot of unfair comparisons, especially with him being in Texas. You're going to hear a lot of Nolan Ryan kind of stuff. But at the same time, you know, you're talking
I've heard Walker Buehler stuff.
You're going to hear that kind of stuff. I think realistically he's like a Sonny Gray type of arm for me, which is still, Sonny Gray is a very gifted pitcher. And if that is the case, I mean, heck, if he turns into Walker Buehler, which he has the kind of stuff to match up with it, that's an ace. And we don't use that term. I don't use that term ace. I never use that. There are about five pitchers in baseball that earn that right.
Prime Yu Darvish is one of them.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that pissed me off the most of the criticism of Yu Darvish is that he has ace stuff, but he isn't an ace. People would just like find all these ways to kind of like nitpick him, like, oh, he doesn't get the shutdown inning enough. And I'm like, I had literally never heard the term. I think that shutdown inning was just made up. Literally just to like talk trash on Yu Darvish by Rangers fans who just didn't get how good he was.
This is a guy, it's premium velocity. I mean, he's going to be 94 to 98, which for a starter is, that's premium. He's got an incredible curveball. It's just how he kind of develops his curveball because it's a little bit more easy to identify out of the hand at times. But for a 20-year-old or 21-year-old that is doing what he's doing, this guy is going to be up quick. I wouldn't be surprised if the Rangers are in some kind of form of contention next year. I don't know if I'm going to go that far right now, but if they
I'm predicting this team to be like about 95 plus. You don't go to a hunt from 100 to like much fewer, even if you spend like an absurd amount of money, like I'm hoping they do because, you know, I need the content.
Well, it doesn't matter. This is a guy that I think could be ready by the end of next year. Whether or not that's the case is to be seen, but you're talking 2 years out, you have a guy that's going to be able to take over the front line, the front of your rotation. He's a start, you know, he's going to be at least a number three in your rotation, going to be a number two, maybe the year after. And you're talking about a guy that's really going to be something for you for the span of 6-7 years. Really a special arm, really a special arm out of Vanderbilt. They know what they're doing with that program. I'm a big fan of Jack Leiter.
Yeah, I got to admit, I wasn't all in on the Jack Leiter train at first. I said, I'm like, well, I just don't want a pitcher. I've been burned before. I saw the Dylan Tate pick. Not that he is anything near Dylan Tate. He has been a starter for his whole time there. And that was part of the problem with Tate. And, you know, I think the Rangers pitching development back then was just not good. And they've definitely shown taking some strides. Also, part of it is Cole Wynn just being amazing and double-A hitters being kind of trash this year.
Horrible.
And but like there have been some really good guys that have made strides this year. Like Zach Kent kind of came out of nowhere and, you know, placed himself very firmly on the scene as another really good starting pitching prospect that was completely overlooked before the year. So I like what they've done, and from everything that I heard about Jack is that like, he's one of those guys that like, you can't screw up. Like he is almost about as sure as you can get of like, this guy's going to be at the very worst, a really solid big league contributor on like a decent team. Like that's the bottom layer. And for pitchers, that is such a rare thing to come by, even at like college.
It really is. I mean, to even have a starter, starting pitching is a really hard thing to develop. And this guy seems like he's got that stuff. One guy that I was critical of the Rangers with this pick, and I'm looking stupid because of it, is Justin Foscue. This guy is a heck of a baseball player. I mean, really a good baseball player. Going to be an infielder, probably a second baseman, but he can hit, man. I'm a big fan of him. I wasn't by any means. I kind of sat there saying, first round, you know, this is a little, I don't know. That's model based. I'm not big on the model there. Oh my gosh, I'm wrong. This guy can hit. He's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, he was a guy. I honestly felt the same way. Like, I was like, okay, this feels like a safe pick, because for so many years, like during like the early years of John Daniels, and you know, when he had AJ Preller, one of the things that was super critical is how many big swing and misses they had, and on guys who had a lot of big swing and miss, like of this long area of like having a bunch of top prospects, all these guys like just didn't pan out like one after another for some reason or another, you know, with Profar and like guys like Lewis Brinson, somehow Nomar Mazara didn't pan out. That doesn't make any sense. Like, but all these getting these rangy outfield, like they're like the stereotypical profile was, you know, good athlete, a lot of power and speed potential, can't really play baseball, but he's a super good athlete. And he's some high school kid from Georgia, and we'll teach him how to play baseball. How many times has that worked out? None.
But that was the Rangers MO, completely mm-hmm. the Rangers MO. And I got to say, I wasn't big on the Josh Young pick either.
Wow.
I wasn't.
Now that's personal.
But I'm wrong. And it's not that I'm picking on the Rangers. I just didn't like the picks, you know, for the range and the pick that it was. It's like, it seems like there was better talent. And it's like, well, I'm not John Daniels. And obviously
you weren't reading my scouting reports. I actually,
I know you were the man. I know you were big on him. I know you were mm-hmm. real big on him. His brother's not bad either.
His freshman year. Yeah. No, I think his brother is projected to be like a top five pick.
I think so. He's up there.
I would love the Rangers to go get him. But like, I saw Josh Young and Shea Langeliers one series, like they're going off against each other and they're both freshmen. And I thought, you know what? I think both these guys are first round picks. Sure enough, 3 years later, I'm a genius. It's my only scouting, big scouting win. Like,
fair
wow,
enough.
Josh
yeah,
Young
fine.
Is really good.
Yeah, I thought Josh belonged in the first round. I'm not going to say he didn't belong in the first round. That's just fair. He was picked 15th overall, 14th, 15th. Does that sound right?
I think he might have been actually top 10. Let me get this up right here. Eighth, yeah.
Eighth, okay, yeah. See, and that's why I think I was sitting there saying, this guy probably is a 20, you know, pick in the 20s, and like I said, I'm happy to be wrong. Always happy to be wrong when it comes to amateur ball or just guys that aren't major leaguers. It makes me happy to see guys that I was low on that I was wrong on, because it just means how talented they really are.
Yeah, one more guy that was like that. We didn't see much from this year, but we did see was very, very impressive. I mean, that 2020 draft is going to look like the biggest crapshoot. Like, I thought so at the time because of how little scouting they had, especially on high school kids. Like, you got absolutely nothing on these kids. But Evan Carter in the second round was a guy who was, like, on literally zero people's boards.
Nothing.
Like,
no one.
Who is this kid? What are you thinking? And, you know, he comes out with – he only played 32 games this year in low A. But, like, still his first professional action, he's 19 this year. He didn't have any like official pro ball last year or in 20. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Last year, obviously, but comes out, walks more times than he strikes out, 34 walks to 28 Ks. The batting average sucked, but his on base, like it's wild. His batting average was 236, but his on base was 202 points higher than that. And he had like a 387 slugging, played legit center field from the reports that I saw and people who I know who were at those games. Like as a 19-year-old, I was just blown away by this kid. And nobody saw it coming but the Rangers.
It's part of I'm going to go back to the book. You know, it's traditional scouting. It's you have to respect the scouting world and what they do. And even though none of us knew who this kid was in the second round, it's tip your cap. I mean, my gosh, the scouts and the organization, Kip Fagg taking care of that. I even think we mentioned Kip in the book. I know that Bobby's a big fan of Kip, real big fan of Kip. Oh, yeah, big time. I'm trying to remember if he's in the book or not, but it doesn't matter. We're big fans of both of us are big fans of Kip and, you know, definitely tip your cap to him. What an absolute talent.
It's funny. Him and Takoi Roba, who was the third round pick that year, who looked really good this year, had a little bit of an elbow injury. But I think he's pitching. No, he's not pitching the AFL. That was Owen White. But, looked really solid, a 2.46 ERA in 22 innings, struck out 35, only walked 7. Just absolutely dominated. And like the thing that I wanted to criticize them so much for is that they're both these guys that are like completely off the board, which I'm like, if there's a year to do it, it's this year, like at the time. but they were so confident in it. And they had screwed up so many early round picks the last few years. And I'm like, you guys have not, like, you have not had these success stories to be like, yeah, you see our track record of all these other guys? Like, we just out-scouted everybody. And I'm like,
I think there's something to be said here. It's a big part of the start of the book is a lot of teams go based on draft models. And you know that I'm the biggest John Daniels fan. You know that for a fact. You know, John's the man. But there was a lot of draft model status that was going into the Rangers drafts for a long time. And it seems like that's kind of parted ways a little bit. It seems like the Rangers are a little bit more specific to the traditional scouting, which is a big part of the book. And for that to be the case, that's what I want to see be successful, is I want to see these scouts be successful. I don't know. You know, I'm not anti-analytical. I've been very open about that. I'm an analytics person, but, you know, the scout's eyes are going to be better than the experienced scout. You know, Jay Eddings is a scout for the Texas Rangers, who is a fantastic pro scout who is figuring out a lot of things when it comes to that. And the Texas Rangers have a fantastic scouting department that I think is finally being permitted to kind of do some things. And I think that John is allowing that. But at the same time, John had some, John came from the school of Preller, and Preller is very much a draft model guy. So I think it's very interesting to see what the Texas Rangers are doing. And I'm a big fan of what they've got going on right now.
Yeah, I think Josh Jung is definitely one of those guys, because, I mean, one of the things that no model can tell you is, like, how much a kid, like, loves baseball and how hard a worker he is. And Josh Jung is, like, 110%, like, the model of that. Like, I always thought the concerns about his, like, what he hit for power. I'm like, yeah, he's just not really trying to. He's trying to use all fields. And if he can, like, you know, balance a little bit more of that and, like, trying to swing a little bit for more power, I think he can do that and still maintain, like, good at-bats, still control the strike zone and all that stuff. But that's a tough thing to see from a model, and I think there's definitely a lot of value in balancing both those things, because you can't be too much one way or the other. You got to rely on both, because there is a lot of value in that scouting and also a lot of value in the analytics. You can't have one without the other, and if you go completely one way or the other, you're going to get left in the dust by everybody else.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, you know, it's this balance, and that was a big part of doing this book, is I'm an analytical guy, and Bob's been a tradition. I mean, he was a scout 50 or 48 years ago. You know, it's like, you know, Bob came up with no numbers. Numbers were always there. They've always been a part of the game, but he didn't sit there looking at his walk percentage kind of thing going on here. And I mean, I went to a really basic stat. I'm trying to think, you know, he didn't have FIP or XFIP or XBA or WOBA or anything like that. But, you know, that is kind of the direction that baseball kind of needs to find a balance back to, is to get to a better game. Because I think that this true outcome game is a little bit bleh. And people can disagree with me. That's perfectly fine. I'm not, you know, I'm very happy being wrong. I think I've established that at this point with this show, but at the same time, I think we can find a balance between analytical people and traditional scouting people. And I think that finding that balance is going to be a really successful thing for teams to do.
Yeah, I think so too. And we talked a little bit about Owen White, who was selected to the Fall Stars team. I don't think I called it by the right name when I last talked about it, but the AFL Fall Stars team. And he's done absolutely, like, stupendous out there, and, you know, had a much better season than he wasn't really as much on my radar, especially since he hasn't really had a lot of, you know, professional experience, because he had the Tommy John, but this year he made it all the way up to down east. That was his final stop, where he pitched, actually that was most of his stop. He pitched in the rookie league. I think that was just a rehab start, where he went two innings, but he is a guy who I'm really interested in. I don't know a whole lot about, But I'm curious, have you gotten any eyes on him? What are some of the things you've heard about Owen White? If you've heard nothing, then you can just say, I've heard nothing, and I won't judge you too hard for it.
Owen White is a kid that came from where did he come from? He came from from North Carolina. North Carolina kid, right?
I think it was South Carolina. Where we go, yeah.
He was a high school pitcher?
Yes.
I remember the name. I remember a lot of people
18 second round.
I remember a lot of people liked him. I'm just trying to remember anything about him, but I can't. I just remember hearing the name very often, and I think I might be getting confused with Mitch White with the Dodgers, but I'm drawing blanks.
I'm reading from his MLB.com bio. He said he drew interest from college football programs as a quarterback. I think he was a three-sport star.
I just can't think of either way. I remember hearing things about him. I just can't. The name's running through my mind, but I can't think of the reason why. I feel like there was some first round conversation, second round conversation. Obviously, he went in the second round, but I can't. Mm-hmm. I'm drawing blanks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to circle back to the Angels real quick before we wrap this up, because I'm curious. It always seems like the Angels, well, they obviously have a lot of money and they spend it. Is it always spent well? No. But the Rangers are in conversation to actually spend money this offseason, which, again, I have my reservations about, because literally, what was it, 4 months ago, they offered an absolute joke of a contract extension to Joey Gallo that was so bad that it just ended the discussion right there, and that's when they knew they had to trade him, because they weren't going to offer him extension anywhere worth, anywhere near what he was actually worth. And that's your best homegrown star since Mark Teixeira, I'd say, and I don't think it's particularly close. And this team wants us to believe that they're going to spend a whole bunch of money this offseason, and like, I feel that skepticism is super earned. But while I have you here to bring on the Angels perspective, what kind of targets do you think that the Angels are, or which kind of people are they circling?
I guess if you can throw a baseball, I think the Angels are interested in you. They need pitching, and they've been very open. It's going to be pitching, and then maybe a shortstop. I don't think it's going to be Carlos Correa or Corey Seager. I really don't think so. I think they might even go to the trade market on that. They might even move David Fletcher over to shortstop, for all we know. But they need a shortstop. I think that's actually an important thing. If I was the one overseeing, I would address that. But they need pitching. I mean, you're going to look at Marcus Stroman, Robbie Ray, no longer Eddie Rodriguez because he signed. But mm-hmm. You're going to even look at Max Scherzer and Kevin Gausman. And literally anyone that is able to give you 5 to 7 innings every fifth or sixth day, that is going to be a guy the Angels are looking at. And they are very open about that. If you were a pitcher, you are going to – we're interested. So that's going to be the case. Legitimately, I don't think you can rule them out on Corey Seager or Carlos Correa. I don't think you can rule them out, because that is someone that would very much be an Artie Moreno type of player. Superstar status who can bring people into the game to see an offense perform. Mm-hmm. Carlos Correa, I don't know what your opinion is of him, but I think he's fantastic.
I think he's a good baseball player. I also think it's almost a done deal that he's going to Detroit.
I think he opens his mouth a little bit too much outside of that. I've always said Carlos Correa is the best minor league baseball player I ever saw.
I think he might be the same for me.
Yeah, just an absolute
stupid
talent,
good he was.
But Carlos Correa is worth the money. He's one of those guys that if you sign him to a 10-year deal for $400 million, that's not the worst thing in the world to have. At the end of the contract, whatever. But Corey Seager, guy that you could go 6, 7, 8 years on and feel confident. So I don't know. I don't think the Angels are going to be in that market necessarily, but you can't rule them out. But if you're a pitcher, you're hello, hi, we're the Angels. We need you.
I'm curious what would it take for the Angels to be competitive again? Because they have, really great offensive players. They have Shohei Ohtani, obviously, who's incredible. They have this guy Mike Trout, who people kind of forgot about, and he's all right at baseball. But what would it take for them to contend? Because obviously, I think the Astros are going to take a step back because for some reason they don't want to pay Carlos Correa for however many years. So whatever. The A's are about to punt on everybody. The Mariners are kind of looking like they're about to take that next step. And it feels like next year, the division is pretty wide open. And I don't think it's out of the question that a really good Angels offseason could see them contending for the division next year. Do you think that's the case, or have I not been burnt enough by the Los Angeles Angels?
No. I think it's fair. I think that they just need competitive pitching. They had some internal guys that showed some signs this year. Patrick Sandoval, Jose Suarez did some very great things. Reed Detmers, the first-round pick last year, made it to the majors. And they have some internal pitching, but it's filling out that front of the rotation and the back of the bullpen. I mean, you have to get Raisel Iglesias back or someone of that caliber. They need about four or five impact arms, I think. And, you know, you laugh, but sadly, that's kind of the case. They need
because I think it's almost the same case with the Rangers. The Rangers have like two spots shored up in the rotation: Taylor Hearn and Dane Dunning, both solid guys, solid starters. But outside of that, especially if they're trying to, they say they want to contend in 2023, and I'm like, guys, that is super aggressive. That is super aggressive, and I don't think realistic. But
Angels have an opportunity. They have an opportunity right now. It's just they have to convince guys to come play there. And Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout, those are two great reasons to come play in Anaheim. But realistically, they just need guys that can give them competitive innings. You know, that Shohei Ohtani every fifth to sixth day is going to give you a chance to win. Outside of that, though, do you have another guy that's going to give you a chance to win every fifth, sixth day? It's up in the air. So you go get Max Scherzer. You go get Kevin Gausman or Robbie Ray. Marcus Stroman is someone that I think everyone is looking to when it comes to the Angels, but I don't know if I'm as big a believer in him necessarily. I think he's a talented pitcher, but you need guys that you know for a fact are going to give you competitive outings every fifth to sixth day, and you need guys in the bullpen that you know are going to lock it down 90% of the time. So they need arms more than they need anything else.
I'm curious, one last thing, just really randomly, what the heck happened to Jose Quintana? Like, that was a guy, like, what, 3 years ago was, fantastic, and then, like, has fallen off a cliff the last couple of years. He's only 32 years old. He's not old, but,
just
like...
Couldn't find a release point. Just couldn't find his release point. Couldn't find consistency. I think that was the biggest thing. You can't find a release point, and I think that... a lot of guys are going to have some weird years from 2020, 2021, 2022. I think you're going to see a lot of bounce back players next year that had a weird year because of 2020 or whatever. Jose Quintana, I thought he'd be an innings eater. I thought he'd be, fine. I don't know if I'd expect him to be anything fantastic, but just a guy that couldn't find his release point this year. And awesome dude. Loved him. A really great guy, but just could not find a way to throw strikes with regularity. And when he did, they were getting punished.
Yeah. What about Alex Cobb? I'm looking for that very specific type of pitcher. The Rangers have had success kind of turning around, and Dylan Bundy is exactly not Alex Cobb. I said Alex Cobb, but he might work too. He's a little older on the older side for that. But Dylan Bundy, 28, had a not great year this year, ERA over 6 and nearly 91 innings. But is that a guy you think has something left in him there that the Rangers might be able to unlock? Or is that a guy where you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's a guy. I was talking with an Angels broadcaster on this one about Dylan. In 2020, he was getting away with a lot of breaking balls up in the zone that were swing and miss. I mean, I'm talking sliders that were in the sweet spot and swing and miss pitches. And I think he had a short term of success in 2020, and I think that we started to see some of the command issues, which I think were partially a result of he wasn't completely healthy the entire season, and that's a problem, especially with command. And I think it was if I'm remembering right, I might be wrong on this, but I believe it was a back injury, and especially with the back, you can't command the ball. So if I'm remembering right, I think that's what it was, but he struggled with command. He was leaving too many pitches up and too many mistake pitches. Couldn't find a way to be competitive over the span of two, three innings at times.
Well, that's definitely not a guy who's going to be highly sought after if you're having that kind of a season.
I think it's a great upside gamble. Mm-hmm. If you get a chance at him at a cheap rate, I mean, I don't think he's going to sign a minor league deal, but you talk about a bounce back, a 1 year, $5-6 million kind of thing. I think he's a great gamble.
I think a 2 year deal would be about. Mm-hmm. More than other people would do, because that's about the Rangers' MO, because they got Lance Lynn, which is the biggest contract the Rangers have signed since Shin-Soo Choo in like 2014. But Lance Lynn was 3 years, $10 million. They were the most sure about him, and they were the most right about him. I think it was about a 3 year, maybe about that, almost that exact same for Mike Minor, that worked out. And Kyle Gibson, I believe Yeah, he was 3 years as well. Didn't have a great first year, like really not great first year, but really turned on this year. And not all of them worked. Jordan Lyles is one of them. Mike Foltynewicz is a guy who it didn't work out. They only signed Folty to a one-year deal. But, you know, you got spots in your rotation. You're probably not going to be good next year, and you're not going to get three top-of-the-market arms. So you got to have at least one of those guys in there. And it sounds like Dylan Bundy is a great one for the Rangers to set their sights on next year.
Agreed. Fantastic guy. And I think that, you know, you can take that gamble and feel confident that he's at least going to give you 30 starts. You know, at a minimum, he's going to be a guy that's going to give you starts, whether they're competitive or not. I think that's to be seen and what he has command wise going through, because we know that he's got enough stuff. He's got enough gusto to make it work. Just can he command it and make it work on the corners?
Yeah, I mean, 90 innings would be a big thing for this team. I mean, when you got young arms, especially since they'll have Colwin like knocking on the door in AAA, and you want to be able to give him enough time that you're calling up when he's ready. Same with Jack Leiter. Now that they're going to call him up at some point next year, that would be kind of insane. Unless he pitches a perfect game like every start out. Even then, I'd still be like, maybe he gets a cup of coffee in September. But those guys are valuable. We saw it with Foltynewicz and Jordan Lyles, who looked better down the stretch. Still not a good season, not a good first season either. But those guys ate a lot of innings for the Rangers, and that was very valuable. So they didn't have to overtax some of these guys that weren't quite ready. But any closing thoughts, any final anecdotes from the book that you want to share? Any, I don't know, words of wisdom, haikus or things that you want to?
Yeah, just, you know, this is a book for people that are interested in nostalgic stories of baseball past. You know, how did the Padres sign Ozzie Smith and Tony Gwynn and Randy Johnson to the Expos? And how was that 0-2 Angels team built? Nostalgic stories like that. How was traditional scouting viewed back then? You know, we talk about hotels, talking about Texas. Bob had Texas as a territory for a while, and he went down to Mexico, and he was late on getting a hotel. So he tried sneaking into the Alamo because he figured it's a church. He could probably stay there. So it's a lot of very interesting stories that are very unique to baseball. And I think that a lot of people are going to find interest in it. And it's not necessarily a scouting for dummies kind of book, but you're going to get some form of scouting terms that maybe you didn't know about from time prior. And maybe you'll take something away from that. And just really excited to have this book out, In Search of Millionaires, The Life of a Baseball Gypsy. It's available on Amazon. Barnes & Noble. You can find it through iUniverse Bookstore. And yeah, man, I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to have you on. For those of you who are not watching on YouTube, you can follow Taylor on Twitter at Taylor Blake Ward. He's a different Taylor Ward than the one who plays for the Angels. But I believe he is a you know, higher quality, longer term upside than him. And how many Blakes, how many books has that guy written? That's what I'm concerned about. The other Taylor Ward needs to step up his book writing game to get on your level. But you can also read him at homeplateview.com. You can find him on Twitter. And you can go read his book. And you should go read his book because it is great. And Taylor is great. And I am very thankful to have you on here today. This is a lot of fun, man. And we'll have to do it again sometime. Once I've actually like read the book, and I'm sure I'll have a bunch of questions and even more stories that we can tell about this. And we can always shoot the breeze talking about prospects or whatever. It's always great to have you on, buddy.
Absolutely, man. You are great. Bryce Batterick is great.
Thank you, buddy.
No, thanks, man. I always appreciate it.
Absolutely. That'll do it for this edition of Locked On Rangers. Thank you again for making Locked On Rangers your first listen of the day. Go make that book, In Search of Millionaires, in parentheses, The Life of a Baseball Gypsy, your first read of the day. Go buy it wherever you go buy books these days. That'll be it for this edition of Locked On Rangers. And until next time, don't forget to enjoy baseball gypsies.